WBAI, presenting the finest in radio's history, comedy, drama, mysteries, science fiction. Won't you join me Sunday nights at 7 for the golden age of radio? Only here on WBAI New York, 99.5 FM.
I hope you feel that way too.
I'm Michael G. Haskins.
I'm Bob Henley.
We've launched Haskins and Henley Drive Time for the 99%.
Let's be generous. Drive Time for the 99.5%.
For us, labor and the environment are the A stories.
But we need your help to keep telling these stories your stories.
One way to do that is to become a WBAI buddy for only $10 a month.
Support WBAI 99.5 to the right of NPR on the dial and to the left on everything else that matters.
This is Harvey Pekar, and you're tuned to WBAI, listener-supported radio in New York. Is that okay? What, do you want me to do a bunch of them?
Oh, alas, it's too late now, Harvey. But this is still, nevertheless, WBAI in New York City. Listener-sponsored, non-commercial Pacifica Radio, broadcasting at 99.5 FM. And the previous program with Gary Null and Reggie Johnson was brought to you on recording. Don't know where Robert was, can't say. Hope everything is fine and okay. But, well, I'm sure everything is fine. Not with me, but hey, that's okay. I don't go on for another 5 seconds or so. Oh, it'll have to do. Good morning. This is Hour of the Wolf, a weekly program dedicated to science fiction, fantasy, enchantment, and the imagination. My name is Jim Freund. This morning, Dan Persons, reviews The Desolation of Smaug, Hobbit the Second, and we'll hear a short story after that. Stay tuned. Thank you.
I'm Dan Persons, movie reviewer for Hour of the Wolf. And I wonder if there's going to be blowback for me on this review. The general consensus on The Hobbit, The Desolation of Smaug in the mainstream press could best be described as cautious optimism. Not really good, not yet, but things are getting better narratively in Middle Earth, so there's cause for hope. But we're not mainstream here. We're our own little tribe bringing our own specialized tastes to this film, valuing here what may be easily dismissed by the general public. My colleague, Lawrence French, was over the moon about Smaug, feeling that director Peter Jackson had taken J.R.R. Tolkien's simple tale of a humble but resourceful little hobbit who helps a team of dwarves regain their kingdom and added emotional depth to the characters and epic scope to their world. Larry loved it so much, he granted the film the rare honor of a 5-star rating. And sorry, I'm not going to be joining him in spraying stardust all over The Hobbit, The Desolation of Smaug. Yes, it is better than the first film. There are a number of bracing sequences here, a battle with giant spiders, an escape sequence that manages to incorporate a trip down a river in barrels, along with bow-wielding wood elves fighting off an army of orcs. And, of course, there's the event we've all bought in for. The encounter of Hobbit Bilbo, played by Martin Freeman, with the dread dragon Smaug, voiced by Benedict Cumberbatch, realized as a stunningly beautiful CG-animated character. That leads into the battle between the monster and the dwarves to regain their kingdom, a sequence which is incredible, until it isn't. More on that in a minute. Even the high frame rate projection system, the process that screens this film at twice the frame rate of a normal film, goes down easier here, although I can't precisely say whether that's because they figured out ways to smooth out the harsh look that seems to accompany the process, or if I'm just getting used to it. It's still not great, but it is better. But that's my attitude towards Desolation of Smaug. Overall, there's a great, dazzling, epic adventure film here, bloated out to create this needless trilogy. Once upon a time, there was a Peter Jackson who said, "You know what? Tom Bombadil is really extraneous to the telling of The Lord of the Rings. We can cut him out." That Peter Jackson no longer exists. He's been replaced by one who apparently will take any tangent to pad out his screen time, throw in extraneous characters and backstories while giving his main characters, including the Hobbit of the title, short shrift. The dwarves, weirdly for being among our focus characters, wind up being reduced to an undifferentiated band, save for their leader Thorin, played by Richard Armitage, and the unusually undwarf-like Killy, played by Aidan Turner. And thank God for him, because it would be horrible for Evangeline Lilly's elf warrior Toriel to develop a crush on one of the more normal-looking dwarves, like the guy with the Dairy Queen whipped hair. And then there's that main event, the encounter with Smaug, and what Peter Jackson decides to do with that, which I can't describe in any detail because it's kind of a plot spoiler. I can only say that if you get invested in this sequence as I did, you may be leaving with a bitter taste in your mouth. I actually got out of the screening and texted to Facebook, "Does Peter Jackson hate me?" Best take on it is that I think Jackson is setting up for the final film out next year to be really kick-ass, and maybe it will all come together. Right now, I feel a little abused, a little bored, and wishing I was as taken with the magic of this return to Middle-earth as others may well be. Your mileage may vary, but for me, The Hobbit, The Desolation of Smaug is still not worth the trip. I'm Dan Persons. If you love fantastic film, please check out Cinefantastique Online over at cfqonline.com.
Well, sorry about the bizarre mix, but that's the bizarre equipment here at WBAI. I double-clicked to have that music start at the same time as the review and way under. And then all of a sudden, about 90 seconds in, it comes on at full blast. Not what I had intended, but, well, there you go. The music, however, by the way, is called Smaug. Extended version. It's from the soundtrack of the motion picture you just heard reviewed. One thing, I haven't seen the film yet. One thing that I am curious about, last time out when seeing Hobbit the First, I saw it in IMAX 3D, and I could not tell anything about this 48 frame per second deal. And I'm wondering if the IMAX version has that as well. Not quite sure about that. I must say that I didn't care. I've seen the movie again on my 40-inch monitor at home. And didn't, the IMAX is lovely. But as far as the 3D is concerned, it did nothing for me. Know nothing about how well it's handled in this film, how extraneous. This time, maybe I'll try the 48 frame per second. I'm waiting for whatever to die down. Actually, had the thought of going on my birthday, but, one of the people in my party, Ms. Adler, has already seen the film, so, well, we'll just go on our own. At any rate, I should point out, as long as we're hobbiting and smogging in the background right now, and by the way, there is no smogging in the studio, I should mention. I quit smogging about 10 years ago. Next week on Hour of the Wolf, our annual, almost annual, broadcast of The Council of Elrond, produced by David Marks, Margot Adler, and myself, Jim Freund, and read by Baird Searles. And I have to say, in my 40-umpteen years of working at WBAI, it is one of the things that I have done, albeit in 1971 or 72, of which I am the proudest. Searles's reading is just incredibly good. And we worked very, very hard on it the same way. It runs about 92 minutes, which is a problem, by the way, for a 90-minute show. But Lister has very graciously allowed me to run over by about 10 minutes next week, and therefore we will be able to bring it to you. So tune in next week at 1:30 a.m. New York time, assuming you're listening on the internet or through some other special technology, for The Council of Elrond, which, in case you don't know, by the way, is Chapter 2, Book 2 of Volume 1 of The Lord of the Rings. Lord of the Rings was never intended to be a trilogy. It was supposed to be one novel in 5 books and a few appendices, and that's what it comes down to. Let's see, other announcements, a forewarning, a foretelling that January 7th at the New York Review of Science Fiction Readings, our readers will be Jen Brissett and Sam J. Miller, who are actually both once on this show together because Jen is running on and off, as we mentioned last week when Kiini Salam was our guest, that Jen has been running the Kindred reading series, which is specifically science fiction fantasy, concentrating on people of color. And Sam has created the occasional, actually, so far one, but I'm sure he'll do more, readings of gay. I say gay, he says queer science fiction writers. And so far, nobody has had anybody that hasn't been brilliant. So I thought, what the hey, they're both good writers. Time for them to read. So that'll be January 7th at the New York Review of Science Fiction Readings. Podcast listeners, for those who like podcasts, I have, since last March, I have been post-production audio editor of 2 different podcasts that come from the same source. which is Nightmare Magazine and Lightspeed Magazine. The host has been Jack Kincaid. And Jack is going to continue hosting Nightmare Magazine. I still do the post-production on both, although Jack has the final edit because he mixes in all the music. But now I have become the host of Lightspeed Magazine. The podcasts. I mean, there are more stories. There's like two stories a week at lightspeedmagazine.com, but one story a week gets a podcast. And these are produced by skyboatmedia.com out on the West Coast with Stefan Rudnicki and Gabriel DeCure, and some really amazing, astounding writers. In fact, speaking of Sam Miller, I had finished editing a piece of his recorded, narrated by Paul Boehmer, B-O-E-H-M-E-R, a name that, you know, sounded familiar to me. I wasn't quite sure why. And I spoke to Sam and I said, by the way, did you listen to the podcast version? I wasn't live yet. I said, the reader was Paul Boehmer. This is all on email, actually, so it wasn't said, but you'll follow. And he comes back. Is that the Paul Boehmer who's been on so many Star Trek episodes? I thought, gee, well, he's a brilliant reader. He's a fine actor, I can tell. I know that he does audiobooks. I looked it up in my, by gum, by golly. Yeah! So, just telling a couple of stories there. But if you have any interest to hear me, just all I do is intro and outro and mix music and edit the sound with other people reading Lightspeed Magazine, available for free at lightspeedmagazine.com. And, I am so full of what I have been doing, I can't even think offhand which the current one is. But you know what? If you go to my page on Facebook, you will see the rest. Okay, somebody has been calling. I will give them a moment. Then we're going to move on. Hi, you're on the air.
Good morning.
Good morning. Make it quick.
I have two questions about Dan Persson's review. What did he mean when he referred to the Keeley's
character? He's not here.
Oh, well, I thought you might have known in advance.
I haven't seen the film. Okay. Keeley is a character from
The Hobbit. I know that, but he referred to him as undwarf-like.
Well, no, he said that he stood out from the other dwarves.
Oh, he did. Okay.
Yeah, I think he should have never left being human, because that sort of killed the show, but he went to do The Hobbit.
And what is actually the problem with 48 frames as opposed to 24?
It is apparently too stark for many people.
Does it bother their actual visioning, seeing the
They
movie?
Get sick in the theater.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry about that.
They get sick.
Oh, and you are doing Elrond next week? I thought that was 102 minutes, not 92, but you could be right.
I think I could be.
Yes. Okay.
Okay. Take care. All righty. So, anyway, I am going to read a story this morning, and the story I'm going to read is called Air Raid by John Varley. Now, this is live. Yeah, I don't get the pleasure of editing the way that I do for all these other professional narrators. So if there are errors, live with it. But I chose Air Raid A because with Tolkien last week and the wonderful story by Ki'ini Oburu Salam last week and Witches of Lublin and all that, I've been it dawned on me it's time that we had a little science fiction on the program. Otherwise, I was thinking Yesterday Was Monday by Ted Sturgeon. There were a couple of other things. And then I thought, no. Let's do some science fiction. Now, it involves time travel, and therefore it's not truly science fiction, by definition, because time travel, well, there are issues. But at any rate, it's a wonderful story. Oh, and here's the other reason to read this particular story. He said, trying to cue up another piece of music. Is that the, paying attention to three things at once, what's going on in WHCR and trying to cue up a music and all that. Yes, movies. You see, Air Aid was made into a movie called Millennium. That wasn't the worst film in the world. It had an awful ending, but it started out not too bad, starring Kris Kristofferson, and I'm trying to remember who the woman in it was. It was actually one of Charlie's Angels, and she wasn't bad in it at all. I think it was Cheryl Ladd. But at any rate, here's a short story, about 17 pages long, and the movie was bloat. It took the short story, it expanded way too much. And this is, I totally agree with everything that Dan said about a director who was willing to cut Tom Bombadil out of the first film, but that isn't what annoyed me. What actually annoyed me was his cutting out the Scouring of the Shire. Because one, yes, is a sidebar. The other one is the whole reason why Tolkien wrote the book. And we can discuss that, how that is involved at some other time. But for somebody who tried to condense what was otherwise still a 14-hour movie and moves along at a fairly good rate for 14 hours, has turned a short novel, children's novel, into what will be a 9.5 or 10-hour movie before the extended edition comes out. And the extended edition of part one is already out. So it'll be about 11 hours for what was a short children's novel. Wrong. Just wrong. The first film was a reasonable adaptation of a very, very difficult to adapt extraordinary epic novel. And this is now a prequel, not so much a novelization of The Hobbit, but it's a prequel to Jackson's first film. That's how I see it. It's just, not quite canon, if you know what I mean. Anyhow, if I stop talking, maybe we'll have time to take phone calls later on what is canon or what isn't canon. But before I begin reading, I want to take a musical break so I can take a wet my whistle break and so forth. So let's listen to The Quest for Erebor. And once again, that's Music for a Lonely Mountain. I think it would be a good subtitle for that. This is Hour of the Wolf over WBAI in New York City, listener-sponsored non-commercial Pacifica Radio, broadcasting at 99.5 FM. And I will now read for you a story, relatively early story. John Varley started writing science fiction, or publishing, I should say, publishing science fiction about 1975. And here is a story from Asimov's magazine in 77. 75 to 77, so yeah. And by that time, he'd already come out with some brilliant, wonderful short stories and novels. I'm a bigger fan of the short stories than the novels, but some of the novels, like the Ophiuchi Hotline, are great. This one got made into a movie, for better or worse. Better and worse. It had some things to recommend it and some things not. The movie was called Millennium, but the short story is Air Raid by John Varley. I was jerked awake by the silent alarm vibrating my skull. It won't shut down until you sit up, so I did. Around me, in the darkened bunk room, the snatch team members were sleeping singly and in pairs. I yawned, scratched my ribs, and patted Jean's hairy flank. He turned over. Well, so much for a romantic send-off. Rubbing sleep from my eyes, I reached to the floor for my leg, strapped it on, and plugged it in. Then I was running down the rows of bunks toward ops. The situation board glowed in the gloom. Sunbelt Airlines Flight 128, Miami to New York, September 15th, 1979. We had been looking for that one for 3 years. I should have been happy, but who can afford it when you wake up? Liza Boston muttered past me on the way to Prep 1, and I muttered back and followed. The lights came on around the mirrors, and I groped my way to one of them. Behind us, three more people staggered in. I sat down, plugged in, and at last I could lean back and close my eyes. They didn't stay closed for long. It's rush. I sat up straight as the sludge that I used for blood was replaced with supercharged go juice. I looked around me and got a series of idiot grins. There was Liza and Pinky and Dave. Against the far wall, Christabel was already turning slowly in front of the airbrush, getting a Caucasian paint job. It looked like a good team. I opened the drawer and started preliminary work on my face. It's a bigger job every time. Transfusion or no, I looked like death. The right ear was now completely gone. I could no longer close my lips. The gums were permanently bared. A week earlier, a finger had fallen off in my sleep. And what's it to you, bugger? While I worked, one of the screens around the mirror glowed. A smiling young woman, blonde, highbrow, round face. Close enough. The crawl line read, Mary Katrina Sundergaard, born Trenton, New Jersey, age in 1979, 25. Baby, this is your lucky day. The computer melted the skin away from her face to show me the bone structure. Rotated it, gave me cross-sections. I studied the similarities with my own skull, noted the differences. Not bad, and better than some I'd been given. I assembled a set of dentures that included the slight gap in the upper incisors. Putty filled out my cheeks. Contact lenses fell from the dispenser, and I popped them in. Nose plugs widened my nostrils. No need for ears. They'd be covered by the wig. I pulled a blank plastiflesh mask over my face and had to pause while it melted in. It took only a minute to mold it to perfection. I smiled at myself. How nice to have lips. The delivery slut clunked and dropped a blonde wig and a pink outfit into my lap. The wig was hot from the styler. I put it on, then the pantyhose. Mandy, did you get the profile on Sundergaard? I didn't look up. I recognized the voice. Roger. We've located her near the airport. We can slip you in before takeoff, so you'll be the joker. I groaned and looked up at the face on the screen. Alfreda Baltimore Louisville, Director of Operational Teams. Lifeless face and tiny slits for eyes. What can you do when all the muscles are dead? Okay. You take what you can get. She switched off, and I spent the next 2 minutes trying to get dressed while keeping my eyes on the screens. I memorized names and faces of crew members, plus the few facts known about them. I hurried out and caught up with the others. Elapsed time from the first alarm, 12 minutes and 7 seconds. We'd better get moving. Goddamn sunbelt, Christabel groaned, hitching at her bra. Well, at least they got rid of the high heels, Dave pointed out. A year earlier, we would have been teetering down the aisles on 3-inch platforms. We all wore short pink shifts with blue and white stripes diagonally across the front and carried matching shoulder bags. I found trying to get the ridiculous pillbox cap pinned on. We jogged into the dark operations control room and lined up at the gate. Things were out of our hands now. Until the gate was ready, we could only wait. I was first, a few feet away from the portal. I turned away from it. It gives me vertigo. I focused instead on the gnomes sitting at their consoles, bathed in yellow lights from their screens. None of them looked back at me. They don't like us so much. I don't like them either. Withered, emaciated, all of them. Our fat legs and butts and breasts are a reproach to them, a reminder that snatchers eat 5 times their ration to stay presentable for the masquerade. Meantime, we continue to rot. One day I'll be sitting at a console. One day I'll be built into a console with all of my guts on the outside and nothing left of my body but stink. Yeah, the hell with them. I buried my gun under a clutter of tissues and lipsticks in my purse. Alfreda was looking at me. "Where is she?" I asked. "Motel room. She was alone from 10 p.m. to noon on flight day. Departure time was 1:15. She cut it close and would be in a hurry. Well, that's good. Can you catch her in the bathroom? Best of all, in the tub? We're working on it." She sketched a smile with a fingertip drawn over lifeless lips. She knew how I liked to operate, but she was telling me I'd take what I got. It never hurts to ask. People are at their most defenseless, stretched out and up to their necks in water. "Go!" Alfreda shouted. I stepped through, and things started to go wrong. I was faced the wrong way, stepping out of the bathroom door and facing the bedroom. I turned and spotted Mary Katrina Sondergaard through the haze of the gate. There was no way I could reach her without stepping back through. I couldn't even shoot without hitting someone on the other side. Sondergaard was at the mirror, the worst possible place. Few people recognized themselves quickly, but she'd been looking right at herself. She saw me and her eyes widened. I stepped to the side, out of her sight. "What in the hell? Hey, who the hell?" I noted the voice, which can be the trickiest thing to get right. I figured she'd be more curious than afraid. My guess was right. She came out of the bathroom, passing through the gate as if it wasn't there, which it wasn't, since it only has one side. She had a towel wrapped around her. "Jesus Christ, what are you doing in my..." Words fail you at a time like that. She knew she ought to say something, but what? "Excuse me, but haven't I seen you in the mirror?" I put on my best due smile and held out my hand. "Pardon the intrusion. I can explain everything. You see, I hit her on the side of the head and she staggered and went down hard. Her towel went to the floor. "Working my way through college," I finished. She started to get up, so I caught her under the chin with my artificial knee. She stayed down. "Standard freaking oil," I hissed, rubbing my injured knuckles. But there was no time. I knelt beside her, checked her pulse. She'd be okay, but I think I loosened some front teeth. I paused a moment. Lord, to look like that with no makeup, no prosthetics. She nearly broke my heart. I grabbed her under the knees and wrestled her to the gate. She was a sack of limp noodles. Somebody reached through, grabbed her feet, and pulled. So long, love. How'd you like to go on a long voyage? I sat on her rented bed to get my breath. There were car keys and cigarettes in her purse, genuine tobacco worth its weight in blood. I lit six of them, figuring I had 5 minutes of my very own. The room filled with sweet smoke. They don't make them like that anymore. The Hertz sedan was in the motel parking lot. I got in and headed for the airport. I breathed deeply of the air rich in hydrocarbons. I could see for hundreds of yards into the distance. The perspective nearly made me dizzy, but I live for these moments. There's no way to explain what it's like in the pre-mech world. The sun was a fierce yellow ball through the haze. The other stews were boarding. Some of them knew Sondergaard, so I didn't say much, pleading a hangover. That went over well, with a lot of knowing laughs and sly remarks. Evidently, it wasn't out of character. We boarded the 707 and got ready for the goats to arrive. It looked good. The four commandos on the other side were identical twins for the women I was working with. There was nothing to do but be a stewardess until departure time. I hoped there would be no more glitches. Inverting a gate for a joker run into a motel room was one thing, but into a 747 at 20,000 feet? The plane was nearly full when the woman that Pinky would impersonate sealed the forward door. We taxied to the end of the runway. Then we were airborne. I started taking orders for drinks in first. The goats were the usual lot for 1979, fat and sassy, all of them, and as unaware of living in a paradise as a fish is of the sea. What would you think, ladies and gents, of a trip to the future? No, well, I can't say I'm surprised. What if I told you that this plane is going to... My arm beeped as we reached cruising altitude. I consulted the indicator under my Lady Boulevard and glanced at one of the restroom doors. I felt a vibration pass through the plane. Damn it, not so soon. The gate was in there. I came out quickly and motioned for Diana Gleason, Dave's pigeon, to come to the front. Take a look at this, I said with a disgusted look. She started to enter the restroom, stopped when she saw the green glow. I planted a boot on her fanny and shoved. It was perfect. Dave would have a chance to hear her voice before popping in, though she'd be doing a little bit screaming when she got a look around. Dave came through the gate, adjusting his silly little hat. Diana must have struggled. "Be disgusted," I whispered. "What a mess," he said as he came out of the restroom. It was a fair imitation of Diana's tone, though he missed the accent. No, wouldn't matter much longer. "What is it?" It was one of the stews from Tourist. We stepped aside so she could get a look, and Dave shoved her through. Pinky popped out very quickly. "We're minus on minutes," Pinky said. "We lost five on the other side." "Five?" Dave Diana squealed. I felt the same way. We had 103 passengers to process. "Yeah, they lost control after you pushed my pigeon through. They took that long to realign." "I get used to that." "Time runs at different rates on each side of the gate, though it's always sequenced past to future. Once we'd started the snatch with me entering Sondergaard's room, there was no way to go back any earlier on either side. Here in 1979, we had a rigid 94 minutes to get everything done. On the other side, the gate could never be maintained longer than 3 hours. "When you left, how long was it since the alarm went in?" 28 minutes. Didn't sound good. It would take at least 2 hours just customizing the wimps. Assuming there were no more slippage on 79 time, we might just make it. But there's always slippage. I shuddered, thinking about riding it in. "No time for any more games, then," I said. "Pink, you go back to Tourist and call both of the other girls up here. Tell them to come up one at a time and tell them we've got a problem. You know the bit." "Yep, biting back the tears. I gotcha." She hurried aft. In no time, the first one showed up. Her friendly Sunbelt Airlines smile was stamped on her face, but her stomach would be churning. "Oh, God, this is it." I took her by the elbow and pulled her behind the curtains in front. She was breathing hard. "Welcome to the Twilight Zone," I said, and put the gun to her head. She slumped and I caught her. Picky and Dave helped me shove her through the gate. Damn, the whole thing is flickering. Pinky was right. A very ominous sign. But the green glow stabilized as we watched, with who knows how much slippage on the other side. Christabel ducked through. We're plus 33, she said. There's no sense talking about what we were all thinking. Things were going badly. Back to tourist, I said. Be brave, smile at everyone, but make it just a little bit too good. Got it? Check, Christabel said. We processed the other quickly with no incident. There was no time to talk about anything. In 89 minutes, Flight 128 was going to be spread all over a mountain, whether we were finished or not. Dave went into the cockpit to keep the flight crew out of our hair. Me and Pinky were supposed to take care of first class, then back up Christabel and Liza in tourist. We used the standard coffee-tier milk gambit, relying on our speed and their inertia. I leaned over the first two seats on the left. Are you enjoying your flight? Pop, pop. Two squeezes on the trigger, close to the heads and out of the sight of the rest of the goats. Hi, folks. I'm Mandy. Fly me, pop, pop. Halfway to the galley, a few people were watching us curiously, but people don't make a fuss until they have a lot more to go on. One goat in the back row stood up, and I let him have it. By now, there were only eight left awake. I abandoned the smile and squeezed off four quick shots. Pinky took care of the rest. We hurried through the curtains just in time. There was an uproar building in the back of tourists, with about 60% of the goats already processed. Christabel glanced at me, and I nodded. Okay, folks, I want you to be quiet. Calm down and listen up, she bawled. You, fathead, pipe down before I cram my foot up your rear sideways. The shock of hearing her talk like that was enough to buy us a little time anyway. We had formed a skirmish line across the width of the plain, guns out steadied on seat backs aimed at the milling, befuddled group of 30 goats. The guns are enough to awe all but the most foolhardy. In essence, a standard-issue stunner is just a plastic rod with two grids about 6 inches apart. There's not enough metal in it to set off a hijack alarm. And to people from the Stone Age to about 2190, it doesn't look any more like a weapon than a ballpoint pen. So equipment section jazzes them up in a plastic shell to real Buck Rogers blasters with a dozen knobs and lights. They flash on and off in a barrel that looks like the snout of a hog. Hardly anyone walks into one. We are in great danger and time is short. You must do exactly as I tell you and you will be safe. You can't give them time to think. You have to rely on your status as the voice of authority. The situation is just not going to make sense to them, no matter how you explain it. Just a minute. I think you owe us... An airborne lawyer. I made a snap decision, thumbed the fireworks switch on my gun, and shot him. The gun made a sound like a flying saucer with hemorrhoids. It spit sparks and little jets of flame and extended a green laser finger to his forehead. He dropped. It's all pure cark, of course, but it is impressive. And it's also damn risky. I had to choose between a panic as the fathead got them to thinking and a possible panic from the flash of the gun. But when a 20th starts talking about his rights and what he is owed, things can get out of hand. It's infectious. It worked. There was a lot of shouting, people ducking behind seats, but no rush. We could have handled it, but we needed some of them conscious if we were ever going to finish the snatch. Okay, get up, you slugs, Christabel yelled. He's stunned, nothing worse, but I will kill the next one who gets out of line. Now, get to your feet and do exactly what I tell you. Children first, hurry as fast as you can to the front of the plane. Do what the stewardess tells you. Come on, kids, move it. I ran back into first class just ahead of the kids, turned at the open restroom door, and got on my knees. They were petrified. There were five of them, crying, some of them, which always chokes me up, looking left and right at dead people in first-class seats, stumbling, near panic. Come on, kids, I called to them, giving my special smile. Your parents will be along in just a minute. Everything is going to be all right, I promise you. Come on! I got three of them through. The fourth balked. She was determined not to go through that door. She spread her legs and arms, and I couldn't push her through. I will not hit a child, never. She raked her nails over my face. My wig came off, and she gaped at my bare head. I shoved her through. Number five was sitting in the aisle, bawling. He was maybe seven. I ran back, sitting in the aisle, picked him up, hugged him, and kissed him, and tossed him through. God, I needed a rest. But I was needed in tourist. You, and you. Okay, you two, help him, will ya? Pinky had a practiced eye for the ones that wouldn't be any use to anyone, even themselves. We herded them toward the front of the plane, then deployed ourselves along the left side where we could cover the workers. It didn't take long to prod them into action. We had them dragging the limp bodies forward as fast as they could go. Me and Christabel were in tourist with the others up front. Adrenaline was being catabolized as my body now. That rush of action left me, and I started to feel very tired. There's an unavoidable feeling of sympathy for the poor, dumb goats that starts to get me about this stage of the game. Yeah, sure, they were getting better off. They were going to die if we didn't set them off the plane, but when they saw the other side, they were going to have a tough time believing it. The first ones were returning for a second load, stunned at what they had just seen. Dozens of people being put into a cubicle that was crowded when it was empty. One college student looked like he'd been hit in the stomach. He stopped by me and his eyes pleaded. Look, I want to help you people, but just what's going on? Is this some new kind of rescue? I mean, are we going to crash? I switched my gun to prod and brushed it across his cheek. He gasped and fell back. Shut your freaking mouth and get moving or I'll kill you. It would be hours before his jaw was in shape to ask any more stupid questions. We cleared tourists and moved up. A couple of the work gang were pretty damn pooped by then. Muscles like horses, all of them, but they can hardly run up a flight of stairs. We let some of them go through, including a couple that were at least 50 years old. Jesus, 50. We got down to a core of four men and two women who seemed strong and worked them until they nearly dropped, but we processed everyone in 25 minutes. The port-a-pack came through as we were stripping off our clothes. Christabel knocked on the door to the cockpit, and Dave came out, already naked. A bad sign. I had to cork them, he said. Bleeding, Captain just had to make his grand march through the plane. I tried everything. Sometimes you have to do it. The plane was on autopilot, as it normally would be at this time, but if any of us did anything detrimental to the craft, changed the fixed course of event in any way, that would be it. All that work for nothing, and Flight 128 inaccessible to us for all of time. I don't know sludge about time theory, but I know the practical angles. We can do things in the past only at times and in places where it won't make any difference. We have to cover our tracks. There's flexibility. Once a snatcher left her gun behind, and it went in with the plane. Nobody found it, or if they did, they didn't have the smoggiest idea of what it was, so we were okay. Flight 128 was mechanical failure. That's the best kind. It means we didn't have to keep the plane unaware of the situation in the cabin we didn't have to keep the pilot unaware of the situation in the cabin right down to ground level. We can cork him and fly the plane, since there's nothing he could have done to save the flight anyway. A pilot error smash is almost impossible to snatch. We mostly work mid-air, bombs, and structural failures. If there's even one survivor, we can't touch it. It would not fit the fabric of space-time, which is immutable, though it can stretch a little, and we'd all just fade away and appear back in the ready room. My head was hurting. I wanted that port-a-pack really badly. Who has the most hours on a 747? Pinky did, and I sent her to the cabin along with Dave, who could do the pilot's voice for air traffic control. You have to have a believable record in the flight recorder, too. They trailed two long tubes from the port-a-pack, and the rest of us hooked up in close. We stood there, each of us smoking a fistful of cigarettes, wanting to finish them, but hoping there wouldn't be time. The gate had vanished as soon as we tossed our clothes and the flight crew through. But we didn't worry long. There's other nice things about snatching, but nothing to compare with the rush of plugging into a portapack. The wake-up transfusion is nothing but fresh blood, rich in oxygen and sugars. What we were getting now was an insane brew of concentrated adrenaline, supersaturated hemoglobin, methadrin, white lightning, TNT, and Kickapoo joy juice. It was like a firecracker in your heart, a boot in the box that rattled your socks. "I'm growing hair on my chest," Christabel said. Everyone giggled. "Would somebody hand me my eyeballs?" "Oh, you want the blue ones or the red ones?" "I think my rear just fell off." We'd heard them all before, but we howled anyway. We were strong, strong. And for one golden moment, we had no worries. Everything was hilarious. I could have torn sheet metal with my eyelashes. But you get hyper on that mix. When the gauge didn't show, and didn't show, and didn't, sweet Jesus, show, we all started milling. This bird wasn't going to fly all that much longer. And then it did show, and we turned on. The first of the wimps came through, dressed in the clothes taken from a passenger it had been picked up to resemble. 2:35 elapsed upside time, Christabel announced. Jesus. It is a deadening routine. You grab the harness around the wimp's shoulders and drag it along the aisle after consulting the seat number painted on the forehead. The paint would last 3 minutes. You seat it, strap it in, break open the harness, and carry it back to toss through the gate as you grab the next one. You have to take it for granted they've done the work right on the other side. Fillings in the teeth, fingerprints, the right match in height and weight and hair color. Most of those things don't matter much, especially on Flight 128, which was a crash and burn. It'll be bits and pieces and burnt to a crisp at that. But you cannot take chances. Those rescue workers are pretty thorough on the parts they do find. The dental work and fingerprints especially are important. I hate wimps. I really hate them. Every time I grab the harness of one of them, if it's a child, I wonder if it's Alice. "Are you my kid, you vegetable, you slug, you slimy worm?" I joined the snatchers right after the brain bugs ate the little one out of my baby's head. I couldn't stand to think she was the last generation, that the last humans there would ever be, that the last humans there would ever be, would live with nothing in their heads, medically dead by the standards that prevailed, even in 1979, with computers working their muscles to keep them in tone. You grow up, reach puberty, still fertile, 1 in 1,000, rush to get pregnant in your first heat. Then you find your mom or your dad passed on a chronic disease bound right into the genes, and none of your kids will be immune. I knew about the paraleprosy. I grew up with my toes rotting away, but this was just too much. What do you do? Only 1 in 10 of the wimps had a customized face. It takes time and a lot of skill to build a new face that will stand up in a doctor's autopsy. The rest come pre-mutilated. We've got millions of them. It's not hard to find a good match in the body. Most of them would stay breathing, too dumb to stop, until they went in with a plane. The plane jerked hard. I glanced at my watch. 5 minutes to impact. We should have time. I was on my last wimp. I could hear Dave frantically calling the ground. A bomb came through the gate and I tossed it into the cockpit. Pinky turned on the pressure sensor on the bomb and came running out, followed by Dave. Liza was already through. I grabbed the limp dolls in stewardess costume and tossed them to the floor. The engine fell off and a piece of it came through the cabin. We started to depressurize. The bomb blew away part of the cockpit. The ground crash crew would read it, we hoped. That part of the engine came through and killed the crew. No more words from the pilot on the flight recorder. And we turned slowly, left and down. I was lifted toward the hole in the side of the plane, but I managed to hold on to a seat. Christabel wasn't so lucky. She was blown backwards. We started to rise slightly, losing speed. Suddenly it was uphill from where Christabel was lying in the aisle. Blood oozed from her temple. I glanced back. Everyone was gone, and three pink-suited wimps were piled on the floor. The plane began to stall, to nose down, and my feet left the floor. "Come on, Belle!" I screamed. The gate was only 3 feet away from me, but I began pulling myself along to where she floated. The plane bumped, and she hit the floor. Incredibly, it seemed to wake her up. She started to swim toward me, and I grabbed her hand as the floor came up to slam us again. We crawled as the plane went through its final death agony, and we came to the door. The gate was gone. There wasn't anything to say. We were going in. It's hard enough to keep the gate in place on a plane that's moving in a straight line. But when a bird gets to corkscrewing and coming apart, the math is fearsome. So I've been told. I embraced Christabel and held her bloodied head. She was groggy, but managed to smile and shrug. You take what you get. I hurried into the restroom and got both of us down on the floor. Back to the forward bulkhead. Christabel between my legs, back to front, just like in training. We pressed our feet against the other wall. I hugged her tightly and cried on her shoulder. And it was there. A green glow to my left. I threw myself toward it, dragging Christabel, keeping low as two wimps were thrown headfirst through the gate above our heads. Hands grabbed and pulled us through. I clawed my way a good 5 yards along the floor. You can leave a leg on the other side, and I didn't have one to spare. I sat up as they were carrying Christabel to medical. I patted her arm as she went by in the stretcher, but she was passed out. I wouldn't have minded passing out myself for a while. You just can't believe that it all really happened. Sometimes it turns out that it didn't happen. You come back and find that all the goats in the holding pen have softly and suddenly vanished away because the continuum won't tolerate the change and paradoxes you've put into it. The people you've worked so hard to rescue are spread like tomato surprise all over some goddamn hillside in Carolina, and all you've got left is a bunch of ruined wimps and exhausted snatch team. But not this time. I could see the goats milling around in the holding pen, naked and more bewildered than ever, and just starting to be really afraid. Elfreda touched me as I passed her. She nodded, which meant well done in her limited repertoire of gestures. I shrugged, wondering if I cared, but the surplus adrenaline was still in my veins, and I found myself grinning at her. I nodded back. Jean was standing by the holding pen. I went to him and hugged. I felt the juices start to flow. Damn it, let's squander a little ration and have us a good time. Someone was beating on the sterile glass wall of the pen. She shouted, mouthing angry words at us. Why? What have you done to us? It was Mary Sondergaard. She implored her bald, one-legged twin to make her understand. She thought she had problems. My God, she was pretty. I hated her guts. Jean pulled me away from the wall. My hands hurt, and I'd broken off all my fake nails without scratching the glass. She was sitting on the other floor now, sobbing. I heard the voice of the briefing officer in the outside speaker. Centauri 3 is hospitable with an Earth-like climate. By that, I mean your Earth, not what it has become now. You'll see more of that later. The trip will take you 5 years ship time. Upon landfall, you will be entitled to one horse, a plow, three axes, 200 kilos of seed grain. I leaned against Jean's shoulder. At their lowest ebb, this very moment, they were so much better than us. I had maybe 10 years, half of that, as a basket case. They are our best, our very brightest hope. Everything is up to them. That no one will be forced to go. We wish to point out again, not for the last time, that you would all be dead without our intervention. There are things that you should know, however. You cannot breathe our air. If you remain on Earth, you can never leave this building. We are not like you. We are the result of a genetic winnowing, a mutation process. We are the survivors, but our enemies have evolved along with us. They are winning. You, however, are immune to the diseases that affect us. I winced and turned away. On the other hand,
If you emigrate, you will be given a chance at a new life. It will not be easy, but as Americans, you should be proud of your pioneer heritage. Your ancestors survived, and so will you. It can be a rewarding experience, and I urge you...
Yeah, sure. Jean and I looked at each other and laughed. Listen to this, folks. 5% of you will suffer nervous breakdowns in the next few days and never leave. About the same number will commit suicide here and on the way. When you get there, 60 to 70% will die in the first 3 years. You will die in childbirth, be eaten by animals, bury 2 out of 3 of your babies, starve slowly, and when the rains don't come, you'll starve faster. If you live, it'll be to break your back behind a plow, sun up to dusk. Yes, new earth is heaven, folks. God, I wish I could go with them. Air Raid by John Varley. In case it's been a while, this is the Chamber Brothers.
Anyway.
Wow. Dig it. Yeah, man. You know this is WBAI. Well, you know it's FM. You know it's FM when you hear that version. This is WBAI in New York City. Listener sponsored non-commercial Pacifica Radio, broadcasting at 99.5 FM and webcasting through WBAI.org. And if you want to play with time, well, you go to archives.wbai.org. And the time has come yesterday. The Chambers Brothers, an all-time classic. And yes, the full FM version, not the AM single that went around for years, but the real one. This is Hour of the Wolf. My name is Jim Freund. This is a weekly program of science fiction, fantasy, and related fields of endeavor. And I think we've been discussing loosely, tying together, bloat in science fiction fantasy movies since we started out with Daniel Person's review of The Desolation of Smaug. And then a story, great story, Air Raid by John Varley. I wish I had done it more justice, but my teeth weren't working. They were working fine when I was coming in, but somehow that adrenaline, that super juice, well, I could have used a little more of it, might have gotten a little more of it correctly. But these are the dangers of freeform live radio. If you'd like to call up and discuss bloat in movies and science fiction, or science fiction and fantasy in general, the telephone number here is 212-209-2900. But add 50 to that. Add 50 to that. 212-209-2950. And then you will have the privilege of having somebody ask you for money to keep listener-sponsored WBAI on the air. What are we asking from you? $10 this month. And $10 next month, and the month after that. And that's the idea, that you become a member, that you become a WBAI buddy. And in so doing, this actually helps us. It proves the listener sponsor concept continues to go on. And that can only happen with your support and your help. 212-209-2950 is the phone number to pledge and to become a BAI buddy. I wonder if there's like a BAI buddy double. Well, that would be a whole other thing. And to talk on the air, 212-209-2900. Good morning, you're on the radio.
Good morning, James.
Yeah?
From your point of view for discussion purposes, what is your definition of canon? Is it what is contained within the six books and the nearly dozen appendices in The Lord of the Rings? Is that all canon?
Yes, of course.
Okay. So, and Peter Jackson in the Lord of the Rings movies did not put in anything extraneous. He did leave some things out.
I wasn't talking about Lord of the Rings. I was talking about The Hobbit.
Oh, The Hobbit is bloated beyond belief.
Yes. I mean, that's what we've been saying all along, is that Jackson omitted some things, a few of which people would consider essential. I watched Ian McKellen talking with Patrick Stewart talking about their current Beckett and Pinter show on Broadway, and even there, Ian McKellen was mourning the loss of Tom Bombadil in the films. But Tom Bombadil, who is possibly my favorite character in Tolkien, isn't the issue, because yes, he is extraneous to the Lord of the Rings beyond the point where why can't we just give him the ring, because he'd lose it exactly, he'd forget about it immediately. But to have all of these characters from Lord of the Rings in The Hobbit and then some totally invented, totally created characters, including a love interest for Keeley, is who for some reason they call Keeley, but it's pronounced Keeley. Thank you.
Yes.
doesn't even exist in Tolkien. Now, on the one hand, you do have to appreciate the idea that they are adding women to Tolkien, and there are very, very, very few women in Tolkien, except in some of the appendices. But so anything that you do for that is fine. However,
but a love interest.
That's perfectly all right. But you see, the problem with the love interest is that it means that the woman does not exist as her own character. She exists through the connection to not one but two characters in the movie.
It's interesting, by the way, that Keeley is, of course, one of Thorin Oakenshield's nephews. It's also interesting. Now, one of my other favorite characters, I happen to like Bjorn a lot.
Yes.
I think he should get his own movie.
Yeah, I think so, too. If somebody was going to just, you know, start doing spinoffs, as Christopher Tolkien did, Bjorn would be a great source.
And, of course, we know where the good professor got Bjorn. I mean, it's a very common Scandinavian name, and, of course, means bear, and, of course, there's so much bear lore. Well, like I say, it's probably, as a friend of mine who I'm going to see the film with in California in a week said to me, the special effects are probably fantastic. I'm sure Smaug is going to come out to be like...
Oh, well, we saw Smaug already at the end of the first film, so...
Did we see much of him, though?
You see a good portion of his head, which is almost enough.
So then, of course, we're going to... Then, of course, I guess... And, of course, mind you, we haven't even gotten to the Battle of the Five Armies, which, of course, is...
Well, that's the third film.
Third film. Well, like I say, as you
I don't even know what the name of the third film is, but it probably will be called something like Battle of the Five Armies.
Or something. Well, like I say, as you point out, it's probably a great film, maybe, but it isn't The Hobbit. You don't take a 286-page children's novel and do to it what he's done. However, I'm very curious to see how many of the people who went to see the first one will go to see the second and third.
Oh, believe me, it's going to do all the box office in the world.
$7 million it did last weekend.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which means a lot. Well, like
and that's only one weekend. By the time it hits Asia, by the time it hits DVD, by the time it hits HBO, the whole point of this exercise is not to make Tolkien. The whole point of this exercise is to make money.
Well, I hope so.
I mean, the first trilogy had had the advantage of actually making a major attempt at bringing Tolkien to the screen. This film, no. To do The Hobbit, you can do it in 2.5 hours. No problem. Peter S. Spiegel wrote, actually, his screenplay was about 3.5 hours
really?
Long. Yeah.
Well, one last thing. For anyone who, I'm sure there are people who haven't yet read The Lord of the Rings, they should read Chapter 8, Book 6, Part 3. And then, of course, that will tell them what Tolkien was really saying about industrialization run amok, etc.
Well, that's what the whole scouring of the Shire is actually about. And there's also despite what Tolkien claimed, there is a political aspect to the scouring of the Shire, to Lord of the Rings, which he himself, I don't think, was quite so aware of. And what he was saying is, if you just sit in your nice little quiet place, evil will eventually find its way to you. You cannot just sit back. And that's why the Shire, and the fact that Saruman and Wormtongue, who they kill off in the second movie of Lord of the Rings, but actually, in fact, in Tolkien, they survive.
They survive the Shire. Yes.
I don't think they're killed.
You don't think so?
No,
Didn't Wormtongue actually kill Saruman himself, and then he was killed?
Maybe, but I sort of remember that they slink off.
Okay. Well, I really thought that they were both done in.
Well, I'd have to check it, and it's moot. The point
is, you're right.
The point is, they certainly do not die in the two towers.
No, they do not. Well,
giving Christopher Lee a chance to live another day, and Christopher Lee is in this film, is in The Hobbit as well.
Oh, he is.
Oh yeah, everybody from Lord of the Rings is in this.
Who's doing Smaug? Is that
Cumberbatch? Oh, Benedict Cumberbatch, of course.
Oh, yeah,
no. It's Watson and Holmes. What did you think? Was there any other choice? There is not a single movie out this year, even American film, without Benedict Cumberbatch in it. He's in August Osage County. He's in every film that's coming out. Well, actually, he's got a major role in August Osage County, him and Meryl Streep. So I'm not kidding. He's in pretty much everything. He was in from Star Trek to Pulitzer Prize-winning plays.
Now, this fellow Bamer you mentioned, Paul Bamer, you say he was in a lot of Star Trek?
Yes.
Okay, I have to check episodes and see.
Well, you go to IMDb and you'll find it.
All right, so enjoy the... I'll be listening next week before I take off for UK, and you have a wonderful holiday, and we'll see you on the 7th, I guess, and do a great show for New Year's Day.
New Year's Day night. I am planning on trying to do a music mix, but it is so difficult on these premises with only the digital equipment.
Oh.
To get that together, so and you can't segue. You just can't segue.
But it's going to be your usual Celtic rock mix, right?
If I can manage it on this equipment.
Well, I hope you can.
We shall find out. You know, we don't have turntables here. We only
have turntables.
No, not we have nothing. We have one room. We have nothing. We have a computer, and we have two CD players, and you can't really segue well from CDs, and I can't carry in. You know, the 200-300 CDs that I need. I access everything. Everything that you hear is coming through the internet.
Oh. Well, for the fact that you're using nothing, you're doing a fantastic job.
Yeah.
See you on the 7th.
Okay, take care. Bye-bye. Okay, let's see. Well, Lister isn't here yet. I sure hope he's going to be, because there's nobody else here. Really? And I want to leave at 3. I'm a busy lad, I must say. This is a very, very busy week for me. So, got to get out of here shortly. And I intend to do so in about 6 minutes, if possible. So, I sure hope that Lister makes it. What can I say beyond that? Our caller made reference to January 7th, and January 7th, in case you weren't listening at the top of the show, is the next New York Review of Science Fiction readings, and our readers will be Sam J. Miller and Jen Brissett, and I don't have bios from them yet. Shame on each of them. I wrote them to send me bios a while ago, and but I can tell you that they're both wonderful writers, and each one... when I had each one on the air, I guess it was about 2 years ago, almost exactly 2 years ago, neither had anything published. And since then, at least one has sold a novel and the other one has started selling a number of short stories. So, trust me, they're good. I know that because I've read them. And that's where Paul Bamer's name came in. Good morning. You're on the radio. Hello. Hello.
Hello.
Hi, you're on the air.
Hi,
we're a little bit
morning.
Tight on time. Good morning.
I just wanted your thoughts on the Silmarillion. Do you think they're going to make that into a movie? And
the Silmarillion doesn't have a story. The Silmarillion was nothing. Have you read it?
Yeah, I read it.
Yeah. I mean, it's really Tolkien's notes. He never intended for it to be published. It was published only literally over his dead body.
Well, they can stretch it out. Look what they did with The Hobbit, which I think is ridiculous.
Well, exactly. I mean, they could and they might, but they oughtn't and shouldn't. Better that they would go to Christopher Tolkien's writing first.
Okay. And I just have a brief question. I'll listen off air.
Uh-huh.
I remember one of the stories, and I may be incorrect, it was about a elf king that came into possession of the ring, and he became evil. Was that a Galadriel and a Celeborn's son?
Ooh, I do not recall. It has been so many years. Since I've read either the Appendices or the Silmarillion. I've read the whole novel, Lord of the Rings, maybe six times, and which is nothing compared to a lot of Tolkien fans and scholars. And I've read The Hobbit maybe five or six times as well. But The Silmarillion I read once, and I found it really interesting because I loved Tolkien so much. And I've read the Appendices through a few times as well. But I've not steeped myself in the lore quite so much of what was not done as novels or stories. I should reread the short stories.
Yeah, I'm going to reread The Silmarillion. I got the audio book and it's voiced by Martin Shaw, so I'm just starting to get into it.
Okay. Well, I'll be interested in your reaction. Let us know.
Okay. Have a good holiday.
You too.
Take care.
You too. Thanks. Bye-bye. Well, Hour of the Wolf is sort of past if I was to begin my outro. However, the Burn Baby Burn Clapper time, which is to begin in 90 seconds. Lister isn't here yet. My guess is that given the frost and stuff outside, the subways be running slow. So, but usually he gets here, maybe 2:15 or so. So I'm a little bit concerned. I do not wish to stay here till 5 a.m. and figure out how to fill all of that time. But for right now, before I start my outro, I will wait for my outro and solicit more calls. If you would like to call up and discuss what we've been discussing, science fiction, fantasy, movies, and novels and stories and the like. The telephone number here at BAI is 212-209-2900. And we'll take your calls, and if we get no calls, I'll play more songs about time, because Lister is late as of, 15 seconds from now. So, you know, time, there's that word again, time was at WBAI, that we had ops people, that we had people who were here all night, and that they would be in charge of the studio, of the air, should anything be amiss or go wrong. Max or Sydney or Ken Gale or Reggie or somebody would come in and say, okay, this is what we're going to do over, time for a station break, WBAI New York. And we have no such luxury. There seem to be two people in the broadcast area at this point, and one of them is representing Harlem Community Radio, WHCR. He's two studios over from me, and then there is me. And, I've finished what I've got to say for this week. Good morning. You're on the radio.
Hi, Jim.
Hi.
Hi.
How are you, Gary?
Not too bad. Yourself?
Thank you. Fine. Well,
circumstances dictated my missing the show, but I just tuned in and heard you kind of at a loss for things for time. You don't have any SF there to read?
Oh, well, I just finished reading some.
I know. But do you either not have more or your voice is...
Well, I have more. I wasn't even satisfied at all with that reading, but to start reading something now, you know, would take another hour or so. And in the middle of that, the person who should be on the air now has shown up. I've got a whole book of stories on time. Time Gates, edited by Jack Dann and Gardner Dozois. And I already read Aerade by John Varley. I mean, I was actually considering The Man Who Walked Home by James Tiptree Jr., which is one of the great stories. But that would take about an hour.
You have nothing shorter. The reason that I ask is that I figure if he walks in, he should cut you some slack to finish it. If
he he'd be happy to do it, but that's not the point. I need to leave. I need to get out of here. Ooh, here's the hotline. Hold on. Yellow. Yeah, Max. Go to that player, right? Yeah. Okay. I've got it up, yeah. Ooh, one second. Pardon me, Gary. I'm not wearing my headphones, so keep your mouth in check. And Max, okay, Max says click insert. Okay, well, I just see insert. Okay, so insert. Okay, track type. Yeah, it says insert tracks. I don't even see where it allows me to put in a drive. It's nope. Okay, I'm probably clicking the wrong thing. So let me close that box and see. There's play, stop, automatic. Is it under controls? You know, as I say, there's play, stop, automatic, and insert. Okay, that's what I did. And then it says general track, general spot, timed spot, break note, timed break note, and voice intro, and instant event. Oh, there's insert files. Oh, okay, that's all the way on the right. This is like three screens down. Okay, yes, now I'm on the M drive.
Jim, can I ask?
I'm already there. Yes, I can't repeat that on the air, and I hope that the phone wasn't too close to the microphone. Dozois. Okay, now wait, at the bottom I see women, body, and soul. That's an hour 49 minutes. It's almost perfect. And then what, prop the door open and split? I may have to. Yes, as it were. Well, thank God an ops person was listening to the radio. Oh, okay. Very top of the cart player. Of this list? Oh, you mean on the other screen. Oh, first I have to enter it. Ah, okay. So first I will enter women, body, and soul, and I'm leaving that alone. I'm clicking open, okay, and there it is, and I bring that to the, okay, I'm dragging it to become the very first item before Red Diaper Babies, right? And 5 a.m.
Can I ask a question on behalf of the other bewildered or bemused?
Yeah, well, actually, if I started in about, 6 minutes, it would work out just fine. Except it's not dragging. Oh, now it is. Okay. Well, yeah, but I've really got to get home. I got to get up and cook. I will do that. There's already a scrawled note on the door from you, Max. Okay, well, let me get back to Gary, and thank you so much. Okay, talk to you soon. Okay, bye-bye. Well, that was Max Schmid. We all get to thank
Max. Hi. You there, Gary? Whoops, wait.
I've been listening to half a conversation with the rest of the ERB Mused 50,000 listeners.
Yes. Oh, you think we have that many left?
I listen to BAI. I am an optimist.
Okay. Well, that's good. We don't have that many optimists that listen to WBAI, I must say.
There is. So could you kind of summarize what we were just not quite hearing and what's going to happen?
Oh, yes. An hour 49 minus 2 gives me what? That would be 11 minutes, right? So in 4 minutes, I will start playing a program. And then the station will be automated until 7 a.m.
7, or you mean 5?
No, I mean 7, because there's another show after that, Red Diaper Babies, which is well worth hearing, with Janet Coleman, David Dozer, and crew.
But we assume that they will be here by 5?
No, that's another recorded show.
Who puts it on?
It's a computer file. You mean, what's it about?
No, I mean, who...
These are all computer files.
Okay, they're computer files, but who starts broadcasting them?
I will click the start button, and then it will segue on its own.
Oh, so it sounds like everything's covered, except that when you said 47 minutes minus 2, I was leaning towards 45.
No, it's 49. This is an hour 49 minutes long.
Right.
That will take us to 5 o'clock. At 5 o'clock, then Red Diaper Babies will begin.
Mm.
And that will bring us to 7 a.m.
Sounds like it'll work. So in that 2 minutes maybe by now,
yeah.
When you put it on, what are we going to be listening to?
You and me.
They will be very bored.
Yeah. How about that? Well, I've got another call coming in. I can try that.
No, I mean, what is the hour and 40-something minute thing that's going to be playing?
It's called Women, Body, and Soul. Natural Medicine.
Is it remotely science fictional?
No.
I don't know.
No. My guess is it's probably part of our fundraising drive.
Hmm.
Since we're in one right now, but there's only so much that one can do at this hour of the morning, at least live. I think it was better to, shall we say, keep the radio station content going. I did some light pitching this week and last.
But
I really have almost no way of knowing, except through another internet device, whether or not pledges come in, and that has about an hour lag time. So I don't worry about finding out unless I'm pitching in prime time.
And the host from 3 to 5 is still...
If he were here, you'd be hearing him.
I know, but I mean, he hasn't even been heard from.
No, he's probably on the subway.
One would guess.
And he has the capability of fading this program down and starting his own.
Sure. Oh.
Otherwise, we hear recorded programming. And this is the second note. I mean, the show before me was a no-show as well.
Hmm.
So what can
Robert Knight?
Yes.
I thought he's magical. How could he not be?
He is magical, but he magicked to a different dimension that wasn't on 99.5 FM.
Hmm.
Anyhow, and yes, by the way, given that what Max told me to use comes from a... directory called Evergreen Pitch Shows. We can assume it's a pitch. And given the time of year, it is evergreen, and I have to start it in about 15 seconds.
On your way, Ensign, as we say from Star Trek.
Okay, make it so.
See you later.
Take care. Bye-bye. All right, this is WBAI in New York City, listener-sponsored non-commercial Pacifica Radio, broadcasting at 99.5 FM. This has been Hour of the Wolf Plus. My name is Jim Freund. You can visit the Facebook page for Hour of the Wolf, or one of these years I may start updating the website at ourwolf.com. And, well, then we shall see... what happens? We have all these computer monitors, by the way, and I just saw a body walking through and coming this way. Oh, my God, it's Lister. It's Lister. He's here.
He's here. You are saved. You are saved from the Evergreen Pitch Show. You have all been saved. Bless Lester. Bless.
No trains.
No trains. That's what I figured. That's what I figured. And you, because I knew that you'd try to call or something if you could, but there were no bleeping trains. You, boy, are people going to be glad you're here. So let me tell you, by the way, that I'm going to move this down there. This is the show. You're not going to be playing Ian Masters this morning because Ian Masters has been suspended at KPFK or KPFA or wherever he originates from. I can't say I speak the truth. I speak what I read in the L.A. Times. And so at 5 a.m., you are to play what I have queued up here, Red Diaper Babies. I was about to inflict women, body, and soul on people.
That's okay.
Well, that's okay, but it's better that people hear Burn, Baby, Burn. Clapper. You know, so there we go. So should I take this call while you get settled in, or should I play my outro? Take the call. Hi there. You're on the air. Hello.
So, all our laborious.